Our police protect, they patrol, and we've given them the right to use deadly force. Is it used responsibly? Are America's police connected to the neighborhoods they serve? Now, a special presentation beyond officer-involved shootings. Here's Doug Wright on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Professor Darizotis is here with us. He is with the College of Social Work and Chair of Practice and Mental Health at the University of Utah, also with the program Peace and Conflict Studies. Am I getting better at your last name, I hope? Am I making progress?
Yes, I'm feeling good about it.
Is there hope for me? All right. I keep looking over to go, okay, is he laughing at me? And then we also have Chief Burbank, who is joining us here, SLPD Chief, as always. What a pleasure to have you here. And then also Jim Winder, who is the sheriff of Salt Lake County, and we'll be joined momentarily by Peter Seymour, who has been a very special report over the last, not only today, but also tomorrow here at KSL on some of the actual numbers in our area. But we left Chief Burbank hanging a bit. I just asked a question, and I know it kind of floats out there in the ether a little bit, but what has changed? What, in your time as chief, in your time as a law enforcement officer, what has changed?
Well, interestingly enough, you and I have had this discussion a lot of times. As you look at the numbers, as you look at everything, use of force in Salt Lake County is down. I mean, we are not. And I would have said a year ago, community relationships are much better. And what has changed is the fact that we have lost the middle in this nation. It doesn't matter, and it's not just law enforcement. You talk about gay marriage, you talk about immigration, gun control, health care. You cannot be in the middle, and we have lost the reasonableness in the middle, and that is where the problem lies. We are polarized so completely now that there is no tolerance for opinion. I don't hate you because you and I disagree. And yeah. If I do, that's a problem that we need to address. And that's what we've come to, is we can't find middle ground. And so I think that's, we're just part of this whole national process that we're going through on all sorts of issues.
Boy, I've noticed that in what I do, Chief. You know, where it used to be, you'd have a civil dialogue. You'd have energetic. I love that term that the old founding fathers used. We had energetic differences. But at the end of the day, shake hands, go home, have a drink, and then tomorrow you vote on something and make it happen. Or you have an agreement to disagree. And then, you know, go out and back and mow your lawns together and make sure that your Christmas lights connect across the driveway. That doesn't happen as often or as easily as it used to, clearly. We wanted to set the stage for part of the conversation, and Peter's been reporting some of those very statistics that here in Salt Lake County, numbers are actually down. Peter, what have you been working on? What have you been reporting on?
So, Doug, for the last 2 months, I've been working on gathering so much data on every shooting that have involved police in the state of Utah since 2004. So we're going back 11 full years. And I did this by filing GRAMA requests, open records requests. I did this by going to all 29 county attorneys in the state because I knew that they would have the data and their findings readily available. Shooting reviews, because every county basically does review shootings of when they involve officers and to determine if they're justified or not. And it took 2 months. I worked with the intern, as he called himself, Stephen Hummer. I worked with the executive producer of Utah's Morning News, Becky Bruce, filing these GRAMA requests, getting the numbers, sometimes having to file two or three additional GRAMA requests on top of those to drill down a little bit more to get some finer details. And I received a great amount of cooperation from all these counties to put all these numbers together. And I determined, based on my counting, bless you, on my finding, that's every reporter's biggest fear is sneezing on the air.
I apologize. I'm sorry. That was Chris Burbank, by the way.
Don't be pointing the finger over here.
I had a coughing attack yesterday when Josh Romney was in here.
It totally happens. So I determined 173 officer-involved shootings in the state of Utah in the last 11 years, back to January 1st, 2004. And from those numbers, I learned that, I'm going to get them right now. 87 of them, I believe, were fatal. Let me get my notes up here again. All these numbers are floating around in my head. 87 were fatal, and the majority of them did involve some weapons with regard to the suspect. But then I also saw what the other side was. 29 Utah officers have been injured, and some were shot in the line of duty. 7 have died. throughout the state of Utah, trying, and some were even ambushed. You know, they didn't even get a shot off. We think Derek Johnson and Draper just in September of last year. And then the FBI has even reported just in the years between 2011 and 2013, 1,500 Utah peace officers have been assaulted while on duty. So these numbers are eye-opening, and they're just the start of the dialogue, though. I mean, we can all take numbers, throw them up in the air, put them together into a nice spreadsheet, but what do they mean? I was able to go through, after I got all these grammar requests fulfilled and doing my own research, I read into, all 173 officer-involved shootings since 2004, since well before I came to Utah. Because we need to know the stories behind the shootings. And a lot of the times I simply found out that the suspects were, you know, mentally unstable, or they were suicidal, or they were drunk, or they were just angry and depressed, or that they were just talking to police peacefully, and then all of a sudden, boom, it changed in a flash, and lethal force had to be used when the police feared for their lives. So we have to understand the trends in that respect. And I discussed those trends yesterday with Major Scott Stevenson of the Post of Peace Officers Standards and Training. He's the director, of course, and he was very thankful that someone had put these numbers together finally, because they're not mandated to be reported, and they're not mandated to be compiled. There is no central database for any of these numbers that I put together, and of course, with a mandate comes manpower that has to be done. But, you know, he said, again, the numbers are great, but they start the dialogue. They have us look, you know, at these charts. For example, we look at the year 2011. Why on earth did officers fire 82 shots that year? Well, we go to one of those events, and that was in Salt Lake County, in Salt Lake City, actually, just west of the 215 I-80 interchange, where a suspect was fleeing from a trooper who had to fire 33 shots. Another one in 2012, for example, we go to Weber County, and we see 117 shots fired by officers, only 39 by suspects in that year. Well, what contributed to that? Of course, that was Jared Frankham.
And then you go back and you look at Trolley Square, you look at some of those, and those numbers just absolutely skyrocket. As I'd like to give our law enforcement professionals a chance to respond to this, and I thought it was interesting that the Fraternal Order of Police, they have responded. I thought their statement, Utah does not have a police force problem, it has a violent criminal problem. And then they say in 2012 alone, there were 697 reported assaults on officers, a 19.3% increase from just 4 years earlier in 2009. Utah officers made approximately 500,000 arrests, excluding traffic enforcement. And they talk about that wider perspective and then actually put the odds on you having an encounter with the police or having a fatal encounter with the police. And it's 0.00004.
Right. I mean, the vast majority, the hundreds of thousands of police responses over the years, they all end peacefully. They don't end with, you know, a single contact, whether it's with a bullet or even with, you know, a handshake. The vast majority do end peacefully. And Major Stevenson stressed that to me yesterday. I'm sure our leaders here have done the same thing over the last half hour. They've been very clear that not all of them end in violence. I should also add, seven of these shootings, only seven, were ruled unjustified by the county attorneys. Five in Salt Lake County over the years, one in Davis County, and one in Weber County. Again, that goes back to 2004. Only two had criminal charges pushed or pressed against the officers, and the criminal charges were eventually dropped or dismissed in those cases.
Most recently, Cali.
That's right. And then there's another one in 2011 as well. Okay. We got to fill out all the numbers. We have to know why things are the way they are.
We're going to be getting more information from Peter, not only today, but tomorrow. But let's go to our law enforcement officers exclusively on this one. And just first blush reaction to all of this. And maybe, Chief, I could throw that to you.
Well, first blush reaction, I mean, I was well aware of the statistics in Salt Lake. And in the approximately a million encounters that we have a year with the public, we have a very small percentage of those that end in violence, and thankfully so. But the thing that always jumps out is, yes, we do a very good job in Salt Lake County, and we do a very good job in Salt Lake City. But at times there's been mistakes made, right? And I have held officers accountable for that. Having statistics that say, yes, it looks pretty good, right, is not enough. It's just like crime statistics. If you happen to be the one victim of the one homicide that year, we had way too many homicides occur. Yeah. Right? If your neighborhood is the one that's victimized by a burglar, well, then you have a crime problem. Yeah. And the same thing exists if we have one law enforcement officer that does something wrong that is not held properly accountable for their actions. And two of those no longer work for me because I didn't feel they met my expectations. And so this is the thing that's very important is even though, yes, we're doing a good job, but also to say we are also holding people accountable when they're not doing a good job.
Right. Sheriff, your thoughts on the statistics.
Yeah, I concur wholeheartedly and with both what Peter and Chris have said. And what I think the value in statistics is like the value in all statistics, and that is to allow us the opportunity to see variables and trends. It is not enough to simply say that, you know, this is what's gone on. What we have to be able to do is to alter something and then evaluate the outcomes. That is evidence-based approach relative to this issue. And so, in fact, Chris and I were talking just a moment ago about some of our frustrations relative to the criminal justice system. And one of my great frustrations is this. We'll oftentimes sit around and have a very lengthy debate about, for instance, substance abuse issues and prisoner population. And then I'll say, hey, why don't we try this program? And then let's look at it afterwards. And I tell you, oftentimes we don't try it. And so we just go along and then we'll meet a year later and look at the same statistics. And everybody says, see, look, the statistics are the same. Well, no kidding. The question is, what do you do after you see the statistics and how do you, you know, how do you turn the knob?
Right.
So great baseline, but we got to change something and then look at them in the future. But on its whole, I would say it demonstrates a Salt Lake County, Salt Lake City, we are a very safe place to live, and I'm very proud of that.
When we come back, we'll get the professor's response as well. I do need to take a break at this point, and then we are going to dedicate ourselves to sharing comments from listeners and really walking through that. That is a most important part of this, but I think we've set the stage. We'll come back with more here on today's Doug Wright Show at KSL News Radio, our special town hall meeting.
Beyond officer-involved shootings on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
I wanted to give Professor a quick shot at what we just talked about, too. As you listen to those statistics and weigh them against what you see at the University of Utah and what you talk about with your students, just a quick thought on that, and then I'm going to get to some questions from our listeners.
I was looking at The Economist, the latest issue, and they were talking about gun violence and law enforcement, and the first two recommendations were exactly what the chief was talking about, transparency about killing, which we just did. You know, we were talking about the stats and then accountability for mistakes. So that I was really pleased to hear that. Makes a lot of sense to me. The other thing I'd say is that the stats in the same article, they mentioned something we're all aware of, that for Afro-Americans, there's one half the confidence in the police that white folk have. And that's an example of, you know, other stats we could pull up about differences between across race, across culture. And, you know, we need to ask the question, of course, why is that? You know, and I think, again, I'm going back to conversation then. We were just talking earlier about the difficulty of recruiting new officers of color. I didn't know it was as difficult as you guys had just told me during the break. And that's a concern. It may be linked to this confidence issue. So it seems really important to me that we ask the question why.
You know, it's an important point. You mentioned Eric Holder a little earlier, and he has asked that police departments look very, very closely at having a population within the department that reflects the population they serve. You know, we could say the same with the thing with the Utah State Legislature. Shouldn't half of them be female, and shouldn't a certain percentage of them be Hispanic? Shouldn't we have a certain number of Polynesians? Shouldn't, and the list just goes on and on. And it's an admirable goal, but boy, sometimes it's easier said than done. This is the most important part of this program. Again, I hope we've set a solid foundation and people kind of know where we're coming from, what some of the statistics are, what some of the concerns are. But boy, you know, there's some common denominators. And so I'm going to share some of these comments kind of back to back here. There was this one.
I know that they brought out tasers many years ago to help stop people who might be of danger to the officers, but they can't use tasers in a long distance. And so I know they use their guns instead. I'm wondering why they don't use blanks. And obviously their intent is not to kill these people, is to stop them. And they usually put two or three rounds in these people when they're taking them down anyway. You don't want to kill them. You want to stop them.
Okay. And then blanks. I'm not sure if she meant blanks or rubber bullets, but then we had this one. These are all kind of in up the same alley.
Why do police shoot to kill? Why not shoot to maim? Shoot them in the leg, shoot them in the arm. They have training. They should be utilizing that training. I don't think anyone has to die.
Okay, shoot to kill, and then there's this one.
My question is, when did it become legal for police to shoot fleeing suspects? My father was a police officer in the late 70s, early 80s, and they could not shoot a fleeing suspect, even an armed one. Darian Hunt was not even armed when he was shot in front of the Panda Express. We turned a corner somehow, somewhere, some way. When did it become legal for police officers to shoot fleeing suspects?
Maybe we could take those three. There's another one that's kind of in the same vein about excessive force, but based on some of the time parameters. What are your thoughts on that, gentlemen? And maybe I can go to the sheriff first on this one.
The sentiments you just played are, and I'm sure Chris will concur with this, are ones that we hear, you know, very, very, very commonly. And they are predicated, and I don't mean this harshly, but they are predicated on what I would consider to be a misunderstanding of the realities of law enforcement. Let me address directly the idea of shooting to maim. We spend significant amount of time, our agencies, relative to shooting proficiency. We require a very high accuracy, and we do train for center of mass. That is the central core of the human body when one is engaged in a deadly force incident. And the reason for that is as these statistics will show, in an actual encounter, when there is adrenaline, low light, activity, noise, all of these different issues, the ratio of our officers actually hitting the suspects is quite low, even though we are training them to go to the largest spot on the body. Imagine if then we shifted that and said, now we're going to aim for a limb, and the person is now charging at you or charging away from you. The reason you're taking the deadly force action is to stop it immediately, and now we're going to lessen our possibilities of impacting that individual. It is just untenable. And I would suggest to individuals, and again, I don't mean this in a harsh way, but, you know, we have simulators at our ranges. Try it. It is extremely difficult when an individual is, you know, coming at you with a deadly weapon, an edged weapon, to try and identify the limb as opposed to the core. So that is the predominant reason. The taser
issue.
Can
I interrupt
Please, of course. No, no.
Because our actions are designed to stop someone else's actions, right?
Yeah.
And the perfect example, two of my officers were shot, one in the leg in which he almost lost his entire hip bone, hip socket, because of that, and one in the arm, and both of them were able to return fire and kill the suspect. You have to stop someone's actions, and shooting them in the arms and legs don't stop people's actions. And so that's why we should. It has nothing to do with whether or not we want to kill somebody.
No, no.
It has to do with we have to stop their actions with the fewest amount of rounds possible. Every round fired, an officer is responsible for. Look at how much I talk with my hands, Doug. Do you think even at this distance you're going to be able to hit my hands?
Yeah.
And in an emotional encounter, there's even more of that. Sorry about that, Jim.
No, you're dead on. And I think that the anecdotal, and I don't mean to be deride the story because they are clear. Several weeks ago, one of our officers arrives. We have a suicidal male who is in the act of cutting himself. He is 35 to 40 feet away from the officer in a low-light situation and has an edged weapon and is in front of our officer, cuts his own throat. And then charges our officer from 35 feet. Exactly, Doug.
Wow.
You know, put oneself, first you've witnessed this. Second, you now have an individual that is charging you with a knife.
Some intent.
I'm telling you. And so
if he'll cut your throat, his throat, he'll cut yours.
And Doug, without being too graphic, our officer impacted that individual in the central core, several times with a sidearm with his ammunition, and he was still able to get to the officer.
Wow!
And collapsed literally at our officer's feet. And I can tell you, if you talk to that officer, he was as startled as anybody. His expectation was, I hit him with the bullet. I thought he'd stop and drop. Well, boom, 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 he keeps coming. I mean, it's just a very dynamic situation. So, I mean, I empathize with the public who believes this is, you know, we've all seen, you know, the movies in which you shoot the gun out of the hand or sure. This kind of a thing. And, boy, that's just not necessarily accurate.
Oh, one quick thing, and again, I don't know if the woman really meant used blanks or whether she was talking about rubber bullets, but, mm-hmm. I mean, do you have time in a situation like you just described to decide, okay, which magazine do I use?
At the scene I just described, as the officer got out, and this is in the public report, so I'm comfortable saying this, people knew the dynamic situation and said to the officer, were screaming at him, get your taser, get your taser. And so he was. He was in this critical moment of should he make the decision. And here comes him charging. Taser is not going to be effective. And if I miss with my taser, I now may have a knife in me.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a decision. What, 3 seconds? I don't know how many seconds. Split second. And yeah. So, yeah, you've got to use the force which has the highest likelihood to render the suspect incapable of further action.
The other thing, and this will have to be really quick, we've got to take a break for our news here at the top of the hour, then we'll come back with much more. But what about the concept? Is it somewhere in the police code or the book that if somebody turns and runs, you can't shoot them?
Well, this is an interesting comment because actually we could shoot fleeing felons. In the time period he talked right. about. When Jim and I first hired on, if a burglar was running away from you, you could shoot that person.
Yeah.
That has been all done away with. I mean, the statute reads that you have to specifically articulate that your life or another is in immediate danger. And that's where our officers are taking action. And so when you look at the case that this individual cited, the officer articulated that he was in immediate danger. Now, I don't have any more information on that than Jim does, right? It occurred in another jurisdiction, so I don't know exactly what took place. But that is the standard that we hold officers to, that immediate, right? You are in danger immediately or someone else is. And that's where you use it. You can't just arbitrarily shoot at people and get away with it.
Yeah. Let's take a break at this juncture. We have much more coming up. We'll also be joined by another guest. We'll be very pleased to introduce our KSL listeners to Juan Manuel Ruiz, who is the president for the Latin American Chamber of Commerce in Taylorsville, because one of our larger minority populations, of course, in this area does happen to be Hispanic, Latino. So we'll deal with that when we come back here at KSL News Radio. Thanks for being part of today's Doug Wright Show. This is KSL FM Midvale, KSL AM Salt Lake City.